Today on Maine Calling, new life for old towns. Many of Maine's heritage industries are not what they used to be. And for decades, many of the communities built around them have struggled, losing jobs and young people. But now, several of those communities are fighting back. Instead of rolling over and letting their town die, people are seeking new ideas to rebuild their local economies. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will look at three places in Maine working to reinvent their future: Jonesport, the Katahdin region, and Madison. The towns are featured in a new short film, Resilience, airing this week on the Maine Public Film Series. Community leaders will share their formulas for the future, what they've learned from each other, and their lessons for other Maine communities. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling on Demand is made possible in part by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn how you can get involved at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, strengthening Maine's coastal and island communities through education, health, and support. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. For some towns in Maine that have seen ups and downs over the years, things are looking up again, and growth in their communities is happening. This show ties into a new film, Resilience, that airs on Maine Public Television tomorrow and Saturday, and also will be shown at a Maine Public screening in Madison tomorrow evening at 7, and will be followed by a panel discussion. But we are talking about community resilience today on Maine Calling. And joining me is Deb Roundtree, who is Executive Director of Rural Development Initiatives at Eastern Maine Community College, Tim Curtis, County Administrator for Somerset County, and Harry Fish Jr. with the Select Board for the towns of Jonesport. He's also the owner of Dive Down East. We invite you to join the conversation. How is your town doing? Are there new initiatives that make you excited, make you worried? Do you wish there were? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Thank you all for joining us, and we are focusing on these three regions because these three regions are those that are in this film, Resilience, but you really represent so many other communities in Maine as well. And I wanted to make a note that throughout this year, Maine Calling will be returning to this topic and talking to people from other communities. So if you're sort of listening right now and thinking, hey, what about my town? Great things are happening there. Just wanted to let you know that. But Deb, I'll start from with you. You're coming to us with a view of Katahdin in the background, and I'm using air quotes here, a view of Katahdin in the background, but you study this and you teach this, and you have thought about community redevelopment for a long time, not just in your own community. So I'm going to start with you, and if you could sort of talk to us about what the communities that we're talking about here today, Millinocket, Madison, Jonesport, have in common, even though they're very different in other ways. What is the story that's unfolding throughout Maine?
So I think the story that's unfolding is, you know, Maine is a very rural state. We're a large state, but small communities, small town feel. And whenever our communities are affected by job loss or closures or, you know, hiccups in the fishing industry, like over in Washington County, there's significant loss that happens in the region, not only the loss of people's careers or jobs, but the economic loss, the social emotional loss that people face in their communities. And here in the, you know, the Katahdin region has been a bit, I say, unique, because it didn't only happen once, it happened repeatedly over decades. So we're talking, you know, from back to 1986, where Great Northern Paper Company at the time was the owner of two major paper manufacturers in the country, here in Millinocket and East Millinocket. And they started to downsize in 86. And it took until about the early 2000s before these mills closed. And over that time, you know, 6,000 people lost their jobs. Mm-hmm. Significant loss in the community. And whenever that happens, people in the community, they grieve not only the loss of their job, their career, their identity, and you're dealing with people's lives. And from that comes a lot of emotion. And grief is really hard for people to wrap their head around, especially in a situation like the loss of your career or identity. And in this region, not only did that happen once, it happened repeatedly. So the mill would close and it would reopen with a new owner. And then eventually, around 2002, when the Millinocket Mill closed for one of the last times, there were 1,300 people that were still left there, and they showed up for work in the morning and to find their gate locked. They couldn't even get in. They had no idea what was happening. So that's when the mill had filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy, and those 1,300 people were left without any direction. So, my role here in the community, I'm very fortunate that the region had established a training center here in the early 1980s. So the presence between the Eastern Maine Community College and the University of Maine system, it was a very natural progression to be able to help those folks and really to be able to help people to create a new identity and to go through a retraining process to offer services in this region for those people that were affected by, such significant loss. And really trying to wrap our heads around what happens when people lose, the income if they're the major breadwinner in a family and they have children that are in high school or in college, and then the wife may have lost their job as secondary impact, and how that has, turned this region from which had always been known as one of the highest per capita incomes in the state of Maine to, to an area that became one of the highest in unemployment rates ever in the state of Maine.
And Deb, I want to talk about what's happening now in just a little bit. But what struck me when you're talking about loss of identity is that, unlike other communities in Maine, the very name of your community reflects that it was a mill town, Millinocket and East Millinocket. I mean, talk about identity.
Right, it was the town that paper made, so the community, growing up here, I'm fourth generation to this region, excuse me, and we never had to create a vision or create an identity or even brand this region. It was already branded. So going from the town that paper made or a mill, it's like, what do we want to be? How do we redevelop ourselves?
Well, I'm going to turn to you, Tim, because the story is similar, albeit I think a little bit smaller scale, but still very similar in Madison.
Well, thank you. Then to pick up on what Deb was talking about, there's a lot of connection between Madison and Millinocket. And Madison's a small town in Somerset County on the Kennebec River. But Great Northern Paper started in Madison at the mill that is in existence still today. And they ran it till about 1960, and they realized they were onto something and they needed a whole lot more room to operate. So they left that facility in Madison, which was operating two paper machines, and built the 10, 11 paper machine facility in Millinocket and then East Millinocket. So Madison is kind of the outlier of a lot of the mills on the Penobscot that were impacted over the last 10 and 20 years. We just had one paper machine. We employed about 200 people. Once Northern Paper or Great Northern Paper left in 1960, it transitioned to a more modern mill where things were automated, so you didn't need 1,000 employees. That one paper machine made all of the super calendar paper for the New York Times, which is that slick insert paper that usually coupons and advertisements are on. And so it was a very specialized mill with one paper machine. But as production of newspapers has gone down, so the demand for that product went down. So it had the same impact in our community because of its iconic nature. So many people's jobs and other jobs in the woods, whether you were operating a skidder, restaurants in towns, eateries, all those, other jobs were impacted by the closure. And we were down from 2016 to hiring and reopening in 2022 and 23.
All right. Well, I want to talk about what's going on in Madison in just a minute as well, but I want to turn to Harry Fish because the story in your part of the country isn't really a story of a mill that opened and closed, Harry, but an entire industry that has changed over really the course of the last century.
Yes. Jonesport is a small fishing village. We've been around since 1832. Anyway, there was in the late 1800s, the sardine, the herring fishing industry really started to blossom. And Jonesport at one time, around the turn of 1900, had five sardine factories, one of which was the William F. Underwood Company factory here in West Jonesport. It was where the Coast Guard base is now, was the largest sardine factory in the world. And many of the fishermen, you know, and my great-great-grandfather, on my mother's side, was probably one of the bigger herring fishermen in this area. And that lasted through into the 1940s, through the World War II period. But then as we got into the 1950s, overfishing of the herring industry started to have effect. And by 1960, all of the herrings pretty much stopped coming in on the shore for, you know, stop sanding and coves, and ware fishing, et cetera. And so the Underwoods factory closed and the Middle factory closed. And then the last one to go was the one down in Cross Cove. Let me back up a little bit, but during the 20s and 30s was when lobster fishing really started to move forward to be one of the premier fishing industries here. But you also had ground fishing, dragon shrimp, dragon scallops, dragon mussels. But the overfishing, and the state has done a lot of good things to try to regulate so that we don't wipe some of these fish stocks out, just slowed the market down so that by the time we got into the 70s, it mostly was lobster fishing and digging clams that were the major industry here. Now, as I said, Jonesport is out on the end of a peninsula down here about the middle of Washington County. So we actually have a little bit of a different climate than all the rest of you guys have. You guys just got 21 inches of snow. We got 2 inches of rain. But so what happened is the industry here in Jonesport became, and Beals Island, I call us the Moosebeck area, became almost totally dependent on lobster fishing. And because of the state regulations limiting how many people can get lobster licenses and so on, it really started to throttle down what people could do in town. There was the wood cutting dropped away. Unfortunately, the blueberry harvesting down here has dropped off quite a bit in the last 10 years. So we're down to just living off of lobster fishing. And that, of course, is if you can't get a fishing license, then you pretty much get, if you can work somehow in an associated business. But most young people have to be looking at, well, where are we going to go? Because I can't become a lobster fisherman, and there's really nothing else. We are down to the fact we don't have a restaurant anymore. It's you know, those of us that are here, and I'm a lifetime resident of Jonesport, born, brought up here. So we started in the last few years, we said, we have got to find something, some kind of an industry that's compatible with fishing, because that's what we are. We've been a fishing village since day one. And what happened is that Kingfish Maine, which grows yellowtail for commercial work, and their idea is they're going to grow fish in a plant on the land. They call it land-based aquaculture. They walked in the door and said, you've got a beautiful piece of land right next to the ocean, and this is our proposal. So here we were sitting here trying to think of what are we going to do, and Kingfish walked in the door. And so we started doing a lot of research, a lot of talking, had a lot of meetings with the townspeople and say, hey, you know, this is fishing related. There will be jobs working in a plant growing fish. And so the majority of the town, it's about a 2-to-1 opinion in the town that, yeah, this is probably something that we need to do. Because otherwise, what else is Jonesport going to do down here? We're quite a ways away from it. It's 12 miles from Route 1 down to where Jonesport is. And so everybody just, including the tourists, there's very few people. You mentioned that I own a kind of a business called Dive Down East and Coastal Cruises. My sister and I have been doing that for 31 years, taking people out in the boat to see the islands, the lighthouse, and the view down here to watch, see the coastline is spectacular. I think we're just as good as Bar Harbor and Mount Desert Island. But we're so far out of the line that it's hard to get people to come there. So we've looked at all these smaller things we could do, but here's a chance for the town to have a very well-organized facility that will employ in the next 3 or 4 years as it gets to develop up to 100 people. And they're going to be excellent paying jobs, and it will make a massive increase to the real estate value of the town, because we're struggling to support schools and all that stuff because there's the few people that live here, and I live on land that's been in my family since 1773, and the taxes are becoming pretty difficult. So this is what we need.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a different thing than what happened to Madison and Millinocket, but we lost that massive fishing industry from 100 years ago down to just one industry, lobster fishing. And as you know, there are all kinds of, they've got the whale rules they're looking at, offshore windmills is using that bottom space and so on. Anyway, yes.
Yeah, so, right, that's worrisome as well, and the changing water temperature as well. And I just wanted to make a note that I know that the Kingfish Maine project's actually on hold right now, facing some appeals, but just to make a note of that. And I don't know, do you know, Harry, what the timeline is on when there'll be a decision of when it can move forward, when and if?
Well, it's working its way through this Superior Court. Actually, the Maine Business Court, I think, is taking it over. What I'm being told is that this appeal is going to work its way through in the next 2 or 3 months. I'm very confident that Kingfish and the town of Jonesport will prevail. We haven't made any mistakes. We've done an awful lot of research. I actually went at my own expense to the Netherlands last year in April and spent a few days over there touring the plant and talking to them. And then I went to a fisherman's forum and talked to them. And they're basically dragon mussels, raising oysters, and lobster fishing. And I said, has Kingfish been in operation now for 6 years, affected you in any way? And they said, no. So that convinced me that we're good.
All right. Well, we haven't talked to Deb or Tim about what's going on in their communities that's new. And I really want to get to that, of course, because this is all about resilience for small towns in Maine. But we have to take a break, so we will talk about that when we come back. This is Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. Today's program is about what towns in Maine are doing to revitalize and reinvent themselves. We're highlighting three towns as examples, and we'll do more Maine Calling programs on this topic of new life for old towns later in the year. With me for this hour, Tim Curtis, County Administrator for Somerset County, Harry Fish, Jr., Jonesport Select Board member and owner of Dive Down East, and Deborah Roundtree, Executive Director of Rural Development Initiatives with Eastern Maine Community College. She's in the Katahdin region. Share your comments and questions by email, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Tim Curtis, I'm going to turn to you next. Probably some people already know what's happening in Madison, but for those who do not, tell us what is happening in that old mill.
Well, yeah, it's gotten a lot of publicity throughout the state, and I think that's a good thing. Similar to Harry's story, when you know you're kind of wondering as a community, what are we going to do with this facility? It's a 600,000 square foot. It was built particularly for a paper machine. It's got some pretty distinct uses. And the way that it was sold, it was kind of bifurcated in such a way that it couldn't really make paper again easily. So We had talked to a couple of people that were what we would consider tire kickers for the property. But then one day, these two guys walk in. One's an architect and one's a chemistry professor. And they say, we've got an idea that we think we can fit our equipment in that mill and make wood fiber-based insulation. And so that was 2019, and they did yeoman's work, raising money, raising the capital, trying to get loans and grants and so forth. And so we worked hand in hand with Josh Henry and Matt O'Malley, the two founders of Timber HP and their parent company, Go Lab. And it wasn't without a lot of work and a lot of phone calls and emails and follow-up and texts at 4 o'clock in the morning back and forth. But they are open. They have three products they're creating. All of them are in the insulation business. All of them have a competitive R factor with the current petroleum-based insulation like foam. And they're a much more environmental friendly product. So it seemed to tick all the boxes. And the story I like to tell is the paper machine was sold. And so it was dismantled and taken out of the building. And the equipment that they put in there to build this wood fiber insulation fit exactly in the footprint that the paper machine left. And that was a huge deal. So this was a good fit for Madison, literally and figuratively.
How many people are employed now?
So when the mill shut down, there were 214 jobs lost. They have hired about 85 people right now. Once they get all three lines operating and they move to 24-hour shift work, they hope to employ between 130 and 140.
Wow. And Deb Rountree, I'm going to turn to you because for your region, the Katahdin region, it wasn't finding one employer to move in and move into the mill or the mills, I should say. Instead, it was sort of rethinking your natural resources, right? Oh, and before you answer, I just want to be corrected. One of our listeners corrected me and said that the name Millinocket is a Wabanaki word and that it means land of many islands. So just coincidence that the word mill is there. I learned something important today. But Deb, talk to me about rethinking the natural resources of your region, that trees aren't just something to cut down and turn into product.
Absolutely. So our story is a bit different than Madison. You know, the paper mills that were here that were left basically were disseminated. I mean, just tore apart, sold for scrap, a lot of damage done to the facilities, the buildings, the site. So the work on those sites involves a lot of brownfields cleanup that needs to happen. So we're not in the same place that Madison is on that level, but that work is happening with folks like R. Katahdin and the local EMI folks in East Millinocket working to clean up those sites at the former mills. But what we do have, you know, is over 100 years of recreation that's been happening here way back in the 1800s when, you know, Henry David Thoreau came here, and a history with Teddy Roosevelt, and we have the glorious Mount Katahdin, as well as a new Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument. So some really exciting things surrounding the tourism industry. So, you know, our region has suffered a lot, but we also have one of the most beautiful places, you know, in the state, four-season recreation. So we're really working towards providing opportunities for all small business and people that are looking to be able to work remotely and can choose a place like the Katahdin region because of the quality of place, the quality of life here, and anyone from anywhere can come to live here and work. So,
Deb,
you know,
I wanted to ask you, Deb, if somebody has drove through Millinocket 10 years ago and saw the houses for sale and empty lots and felt sad for Millinocket, and then if they drove through today, what would they find?
Well, I think it still looks a lot of the same. We're working on renovations in downtown, and some of the older buildings have been bought and renovated and created into new business. But you know, they will see the town being much more open to tourists and visitors from away. People from all over the world come to this region. Another significant loss was a few weeks ago in downtown Millinocket. A historic building that was a bank for many, many years was ruined by fire. So we have a major cleanup to do in downtown Millinocket. And that building was a building that could have been renovated and used for, space for stores or even a restaurant. Beautiful, beautiful space. And now we have to clean that up. But I think that opportunities that are existing with the growth in the tourism business, such as like New England Outdoor Center and what they've done up there, incredible facility that's built on the border of Baxter State Park and near the lakes. We have all of this natural resources here that have been here. So we're looking at embracing the tourism industry and what we can offer to people that come here, and how do we brand ourselves to the new Katahdin region versus what the image was before, and bring in the tourism industry that has been here for many, many years, and really embrace that, embrace the opportunity to bring people from away and provide a wonderful visit to this region, so people want to come back and tell the story that has been here for many years, and the story of the Wabanaki people, and the story of the paper industry, and how important the Penobscot River has been to all of these communities, and how it impacts all of the regions here.
We're going to turn now to Nancy Smith from Grow Smart Maine, CEO of Grow Smart Maine. Nancy, your work, of course, centers, as your name says, on smart growth. What are some of the principles for these small communities that are best practices as they think of reinventing themselves and either trying to attract a new employer or change directions for their economy?
Thank you. It's a great question, and I think you're hearing it in the conversations on this show, that you start by acknowledging the loss. You need to just take a moment and realize what's being lost with the change that's happening. But it's critical then to pivot and to say, okay, we need to move away from what we've lost. What are we going to move towards? And often it's one person or a few people at a time that start with yes. And that's what I'm hearing now is our hometown is so much of our identity, whether it's how many centuries your family has owned property to whether or not your parents and grandparents worked at the mill. And so the key is that, it's local, that people are ready and want to bring what's next. And as you're hearing too, it's not just one thing, that you have to look at all the components of the community and of quality of life. And that's at the core what smart growth is. How do you encourage and welcome growth in a way that keeps what you love about your community? And sometimes you'll hear, well, we don't want to grow. Well, the opposite of growth is decay. And across the state, there's that challenge of people feeling like suddenly there's too much growth. We just need to look at how to weigh into it. So, I've heard so far it's the natural resource sector. How do we develop a sustainable business model or models from that? It's historic preservation, the mention of that bank that was lost, that the historic building in the center of town. Transportation. How is our transportation infrastructure matching with where we want the community to grow? Those are just some of the very basics that start these conversations.
And Nancy, I want to talk to you about a little bit about resistance because, in the Katahdin region, obviously a lot of resistance to Katahdin Woods and Waters. In Jonesport, Harry not only is excited about the Kingfish Project, but it's on hold because people are appealing that for environmental reasons. And we understand this tension because it's so important to preserve what we have. It's so important to preserve the beauty of Maine, protect the natural resources, protect the environment, people. But there's also a psychological element to not change the nature of the area that you live in, the thing that makes it special, the thing that makes it different. And I'm wondering if you have advice for communities, Nancy, about how to negotiate that kind of natural and human resistance to change.
I'll speak to that. This is Harry from
Okay, Nancy, you
Jonesport.
go on hold. We're going to talk to
Go
Harry.
on.
Go ahead,
All
Harry.
right, I'm sorry. one of the things I haven't mentioned yet is one of the biggest projects we've got going here in town right now is developing a new working waterfront facility for the fishermen, for everyone that's using the ocean. We bought a peninsula that's here in town. We call it, Henry Point, and it's going to become a working waterfront. It's also an existing campground, which has been there in operation for over 100 years. But we're putting in a new road, a much larger parking area, and two launch ramps. And as we move into phase two, there's going to be a fairly large heavy-duty pier so that boats can lay alongside even at low tide to offload stuff or take equipment aboard and on. And that's one of our biggest projects right now. What's happened in the last 50 years as people have had to leave, they've sold their properties. So most of the existing fishermen no longer live on the waterfront. I mean, I'm lucky. I do. As I said, I'm in old land here. The ocean is about 200 feet from me. But a lot of our fishermen are now living inland and commute by truck and small boats. And we've been using a state recreational boating facility for a long time. And so the town has come forward and we've invested hundreds of thousands of dollars in it. And we've got some multi-million dollar grants lined up to get this thing going. We're hoping to have it operational by next summer, a year from now. And so, you know, the people have come together and said, yeah, I know. So we've raised money to match grants and so on. I felt that, and all of us felt that one of the things we needed to do was to make it easier for the fishermen to get in and out of the water. And you know, a lot of times when you think of a fisherman, you don't think about that. They're out there in their boat. But guess what? They've got to get from land to their boat. And they've got to be able to move their gear, their trap gear and so forth. So there's going to be floats so they can do that. And so you've got to look at what you have available. And this sounds somewhat like that Millinocket area is doing is, okay, you've got all this land and all this beauty. Let's see if we can make this work for us. We purchased that peninsula 5 years ago, 4 years ago, I guess. And we're getting there. We're going to have a new working waterfront where the fishermen have a really first-class place to be able to get in and out of the water, as simple as that.
It sounds to me, too, reading between the lines here, Harry, that what you're saying is that even though Jonesport is working to reinvent itself, it's also really making a point and making sure it doesn't abandon its heritage industry of fishing.
Oh, no, the fishing industry is the most important thing here in town. It has been for 200 years, and it will continue to be. But what, of course, also we needed was other types of jobs and a massive increase to our land valuation so we'd have a better tax base. But this working waterfront, I mean, all the fishermen are on board with this, and they can hardly wait for this thing to work. That work, you know, for the last 50 years, they've been using a small state recreational boating facility. How they manage to put 50 or 60 or 80 fishermen through a facility that has 15 parking spaces, they're just fabulous. And we said, whatever you can make work. And so they're really looking forward to this new facility to so that they're not worrying, well, if I got to wait 3 days before I can put a load of traps down there to get them in the water. So that's we don't want to change Jonesport very much, but we want to make it with better opportunities for the people that don't have current jobs so they don't have to leave.
And I'm going to turn back to Nancy Smith from Grow Smart Maine and this whole idea of your advice to communities trying to negotiate resistance to change.
Well, and I want to say that Harry raises a great point. When oftentimes you hear when things are changing, when new people are coming into a town and investing and values go up, you risk gentrification where the people who have always been there can't afford to be. And the key to avoiding gentrification is while there are investments in the buildings and the values are going up, what are you doing to invest in the people? And that boat pier that he's talking about is exactly that example of investing in the people in the industries that have been a part of it all along. To the bigger question about managing resistance, one of the resources GrowSmart has on our website under community guides is a guide to local advocacy. And it really does talk about what is your goal? And if your goal is to address resistance, who are the right people to share that? What are the right messages that are going to resonate with the people that you're talking to? And who are the right people? That sometimes it's one-on-one conversations at the kitchen table to talk about what the concerns are and credibly how to address those. That, you know, it's, you know, Mainers are smart. Sweeping campaigns are going to be met with an equal amount of resistance. But the one-on-one conversations of what are we trying to achieve? What's our shared goal? And what are you afraid of losing? And how do we address that directly and respectfully? And those conversations one-on-one, led by the people who live there, are critical to easing those concerns that look an awful lot like resistance.
Well, Nancy Smith, I see Deb Rowntree nodding her head in agreement as you talk. Thank you so much for joining us, Nancy Smith with Grow Smart Maine. We are going to take another quick break. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Our topic today, new life for old towns. And we are talking specifically about the Katahdin region, Madison, and Jonesport. My guest today, Harry Fish Jr. with the town of Jonesport, Deborah Rowntree from Millinocket. She's with Rural Development Initiatives, and Tim Curtis with Somerset County talking about the town of Madison. Join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. If you are super fast, you can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org or post on social media. Joining us now is Jim Hauptman. Jim is the director of the film that precipitated this conversation today. It's called Resilience. It'll air on Maine Public Television tomorrow and Saturday, and there's a special screening in Madison tomorrow night. Jim, what gave you the idea for this film?
Oh, good morning. So the film's idea actually came from the Department of Economic and Community Development, and they were the ones that wanted to highlight and bring the story to life, and then they engaged our firm, Blaze Partners, to help in that effort.
And how did you choose the three towns? Did DECD choose those, or did you pick them for specific reasons?
That's a great question. It was a group effort in the selection of the communities. We wanted to do a geographic spread across the state because there are really wonderful things happening in all corners. And we wanted to show different communities that were at different points along the cycle. Some just having an idea and just starting to get going, and others seeing their vision really coming to fruition.
Did anything strike you, Jim, as you worked on the film that you maybe didn't know before?
Oh, I think everyone involved had a real aha moment every day that we were filming. I think the name of the film really came from a collective feeling of, you know, just these communities picking themselves up by their bootstraps and deciding to move forward. And, you know, for us, I think we do a lot of filming and documentaries and commercials. This for us was really just such a special opportunity to see through the eyes of the communities what their hardships were, what they were facing, and what the realities were. And it's, you know, we hear it all the time. It's sometimes difficult when you live in Southern Maine to appreciate what's happening in Northern Maine. But these are stories that are consistent across the state. And, you know, whether it's housing or childcare or livable wages, it's the same drumbeat wherever we went.
And Jim, you remind everybody what beautiful places these are just with the videography.
Yeah, I mean, we got very lucky because we were shooting in the fall, and you never know when you plan your days to spend 2 days in Jonesport and a few days in Madison and Millinocket. And in fact, I think we arrived in Jonesport right after one of the big storms. So the clouds literally broke as the team was setting up their cameras, which is kind of like, wow, that never happens.
Well, Jim, thank you. And Harry, it's never really foggy in Jonesport, right? That was a joke.
Jonesport, the Loser Peak Light down here has the record time of fog on the East Coast of the United States. You know, like a couple of weeks at a time.
I'm not surprised. Well, Jim, I'm glad you had good luck and were able to film when the sun was shining. That was Jim Houtman with Blaze Partners. The film he worked on, Resilience, airs on Maine Public Television Thursday at 9 and also on Saturday. All three of our panelists are in the film. And for those of you in the Madison area, don't forget about the screening and panel discussion tomorrow evening at 7. We'll go to Torbert, who's calling from York. Hi, Torbert. Go ahead.
Good morning, Jennifer and guest. I would like to ask, in Madison's case, I understand back when the New York Times owned the mill that it came with a large amount of forest land, and also they had a very favorable contract with the Municipal Electric Company. I wonder if those two assets were still in play when this decision to go to fiber-based wood insulation was made.
Yeah, I can address a little bit of that. The New York Times owned 40%. They never owned a majority of the mill. And that was very common for a lot of mills on the Kennebec. Myllykoski Oy, a Finnish company, owned it from 1980 to the early 2000s. Then they sold to UPM, the largest paper maker in the world. In regards to Madison Electric, which is electric, municipally owned electric company, that goes back to 1899, when the legislature actually incorporated a village area of Madison around the mill and the other textile mills. So Madison had its own fire, own police, own electric. And so that developed from the growth of the textile mills and eventually into Great Northern Paper. And so Madison Electric still provides power for portions of Madison and neighboring towns like Norwalk, Anson, and Starks. And yes, for economic development, having your own electric municipally owned company is a huge advantage. Not necessarily the cost per kilowatt hour. They're still fairly, you know, within range of what CMP and Versant and others offer, but it's the flexibility and the delivery of the electricity. And large companies like Madison Paper and now Timber HP and Backyard Farms, the 44-acre hydroponic tomato greenhouse, all of those large employers benefit from the flexibility of working with Madison Electric.
All right. Well, thank you, Torbert, for your call and a good question here. I'm going to go to an email that's come in. Let's see. This is from Brian. Brian writes, and he's writing from Aroostook County. Many Maine towns have been turning to variations of tourism to invigorate their local economies. It's a common notion that tourism is a perfect and perfectly clean, sustainable means to infuse money into these local economies. I believe that's questionable at best. Tourism is not without impact. My focused alternate view offered here is that there is environmental cost to tourism, whose champions naively exploit no differently than other industries. And I'm wondering, Deb, if that's been a consideration as the Katahdin region tries to expand its tourist base.
Absolutely. I think that consideration has been taken in many times and on many different levels, because we want to develop the region in a smart way that's going to match what the communities want. You know, hearing what people want in the community, whether it's housing, whether it's hotels, whether it's restaurants. I mean, we don't want to build out the region and have it turn into another gateway community that's just uncontrollable with, you know, hundreds of thousands of tourists with no infrastructure. We want to build it out in a smart way that's planned and utilizes local resources as well as local people to fill those jobs. And how we do that, is building trust in the communities, building relationships with people and organizations, and doing it in a manner that it's not going to, devastate the natural resource or the infrastructure of what we have here in this region. You know, we have 8 small towns that make up the Katahdin region, and all of those towns have their own identity, and all those towns have their own thoughts. So taking that into consideration when we look at the impact on local EMS, the fire departments, hospitals, how tourism can actually affect all of that as well. So all of that needs to be taken into consideration.
An email here from Z. There are several cities who have become Main Street Maine communities or Main Street Maine affiliates, which means they have a commitment to creating high quality places and building stronger communities through preservation-based economic development. This is an interesting model that anyone who is interested in community development should check out. So Z with a shout out for the Main Street Maine communities. I wanted to ask you, and that kind of reminds me, and I'll turn to you, Tim, how much of an emphasis when you're looking at redeveloping Madison and other towns in your region, Skowhegan, is the focus on let's make the downtown the best it can be. Let's make sure these old buildings are preserved and renovated. Let's try to avoid the sprawl that so dominated really the 20th century in American development.
Well, Jennifer, let me tell you the harsh realities of downtowns in a mill town. They're loud, they're noisy, they're heavily trafficked. And so I agree with what you stated there. It is important to take your downtown buildings, many of them were built over 100 years ago, and try to maintain that infrastructure. I was the town manager in Madison from 2015 to 2023. Back in 2015, we had many vacancies on Main Street, many open spots. What's interesting is now there's not a vacancy on Main Street. However, we have three medical marijuana retail dispensaries that have taken up those spots on Main Street. So some people, struggle with that type of development, but they're paying taxes and they're filling and they're taking care of those spots. I often hear people say, oh, well, wouldn't it be great if we had a little cafe where you could sit outside and have coffee. And I caution people about trying to take what they see in Damariscotta and Wiscasset and Freeport and try to translate that to a mill town. You don't have to sit on Main Street for more than 30 seconds before a log truck goes by. And you have to elevate your conversation because you can't hear anything when their air brakes go to stop at the stoplight. So you can't take your downtown and make it look like a coastal downtown or another peaceful place because you can't stop the truck traffic. I mean, it's the name of the game. We've had people try to convince us to divert it and change it, and there's just no way around it. You've got to have trucks going through that town to get to the other points of industry.
Mm. And Deb, that's, I guess, a really interesting conversation in your region as well, because whether you call it downtown or just the center of town, depending on the size of the community, people come to the Totten region to get away from towns. They want to get into nature. So it's a challenge to attract people to the actual crossroads, the places where there are buildings, correct?
Correct. Yeah, in downtown in Millinocket is in a one-way street that goes in one direction that used to go to the mill gate. So we're thinking about, that the direction of traffic and how that impacts with tourists coming to the region and the establishments that are on Main Street and businesses and how that all is affected by, like what Tim just mentioned, trucks going down Main Street.
And Harry, I'll turn to you, just a little bit of time left. How are you thinking about, and I'm using air quotes here, downtown Jonesport as you think about the future?
Well, downtown Jonesport, there's only about 1,400 people that live in the town of Jonesport. We're stretched out along Route 187. There's a couple of small side roads. There are a few buildings still in the middle of town that were built in the 1800s. But you guys are talking about what we would consider a fairly large city, and Jonesport is a very small community of 1,300, 1,400 people. And there's another 800 or so over on Beals. We don't have a restaurant anymore. We don't have a lot, and there's only one or two small stores. We have a diner and a takeout and another one that Moosebeck Video, which is kind of a convenience store. So our small downtown area, the village I call it, hasn't changed much in a long time. Some of the older buildings have been refurbished, But we need to get more people in town. But to do that, we've got to have job opportunities. Some people can move in and bring a small business with them, one or two person thing, or, you know, like a home business. But we've got an economic development committee, and I'm on that. Being on the select board, I wound up being on almost every committee the town has. So anyway, we're trying to develop that as well.
Well,
I mentioned earlier about the work in waterfront. And so, yeah, when you talk about downtown development, for us, that's fixing a few buildings and trying to make space for people to have small storefronts.
Well, I so appreciate all three of you, and I'm so sorry we're out of time. That was Harry Fish Jr. with the town of Jonesport, Tim Curtis also with us, County Administrator for Somerset County, and Deb Roundtree, Executive Director of Rural Development Initiatives with Eastern Maine Community College. Today's sound engineer was Jane Donahue. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Again, the film Resilience tomorrow night at 9 on Maine Public Television will air again on Saturday. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.